8:35, time to check in with the city of Bloomington.
That's right.
Our great friend is Mick Renheisen. He's the deputy mayor. Mick, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, Glass. Good morning, Keith.
Good morning.
We're watching the U.S. Open here on the side. Of course we are, because it's the 118th edition, the second major championship. Jordan Spieth is 4 over through 2 holes, Mick. He might have ejected a little bit early this morning. The wind is blowing at Shinnecock Hills. Oh, my. And we've seen some golf shots already. A little offline, a lot offline. The rough is nasty. Give us your thoughts on the second major championship.
Well, I would not have picked Jordan, even though now I know he's blown up on hole number two. My picks, I have two. I have a sentimental pick, and that's Phil Mickelson. I really would like Phil to get his
made a 12-footer for par on number two. That was good.
He's been so close so many times, and at his age, you know, those opportunities become more difficult. But I think he's in great shape, and if he putts well, he's, you know, he can play with anybody anytime. So Phil's my sentimental pick. My practical pick is Rory McIlroy. I just think he's been kind of getting better and kind of grooming for the Masters and the, you know, the four major tournaments, and obviously he didn't play well enough in the Masters, so here's the next opportunity for him to get another trophy of a significant type. That's what those guys play for. The most significant trophies are what really matters, and that's what they focus on. I'm hoping that one of those two guys wins.
McIlroy is 1 over, just had a 360 bogey from about 4 feet. Phil made a 12-footer for par on his second hole, and McIlroy just hit his tee shot in somebody's lunch. So we'll
question for you
yes.
is, what will the winning score be? How many under, if at all?
I said last night 2 under would be my maximum, because the wind forecast shifted last night about 6:30 to problems for today, and I just don't think the USGA is going to set up a course after last year's scoring fest at Erin Hills that's going to promote scoring at all. So I'm sticking with 2 under. There will be 2 people under par. That's it.
Wow.
I want it
I'll
tough.
I'll make it a test.
Let's get National Championship Golf. Par 70, Mick, not a lot of places to make up for bogeys, as we know, with only 2 par 5. So the best
correct.
Should be tested. How's your grass doing at the ridge part back there?
It's coming in nicely. You know, the Mother Nature's actually helping with the rain.
They
got it all. Sod's been laid down, so these deep soaking rains have certainly helped with establishment of the turf. There's successful bids received for the clubhouse project at Cascades as well, so they'll be initiating that project in the summer, and within the next month or so, you'll see a temporary clubhouse trailer be placed in the parking lot, and the old clubhouse will come down and new construction will start with a new clubhouse hopefully open for the next year opening season. You know, when I say opening season, I mean when the weather starts to improve in March or April.
Not January 12th.
That's exciting. And then additional fairways to be sodded over with zoysia, 9 at a time, as I think they're planning on another 9 in the fall. And so in 3 years or 3 seasons, we should have a completely renovated golf course, including a new clubhouse. And that should happen, obviously, by next year, the clubhouse part.
Very exciting. Very, very exciting. So a facelift for Cades. That's the good news. The city golf gets started here right around the corner. You got to start posting scores. We'll start playing in July. We'll do that later. But we've got plenty of stuff to do, Keith.
Mick, speaking about the weather, there's a lot of construction projects going on in Bloomington. Where are we deadline-wise for that? Has the weather affected any of this?
It does. I haven't heard anybody alter their completion dates. Every contractor expects to have some kind of weather delays. The amount they can absorb is kind of contingent on how many of those happen and how severe, like these heavy rains multiple days in a row. Nobody's working dirt. If that's the stage
right.
you were in, you can't do that. If you're working on a road, that's not as much of a big deal, right? So it just kind of varies on the stage of the project. I've not heard anybody, city projects, county projects, state projects, indicate that this recent rain event, series of rain events, has altered their completion dates.
Mick, let's look at the other end of this. What about the high temperatures? What will that do to construction?
Well, there are a lot of altered schedules already for starting time. So many of the contractors start work early as soon as there's daylight. Some of them work in the evenings, depending on who they work for and the lighting capacity of their respective project needs. And so there's very early starts, particularly as it gets hot and humid. I don't know about how long they work their respective crews. I know some crews are working 4-10s, and some crews are working 6-10-hour shifts. Now, I don't know if that's the same people or if it's different shifts coming in. But I know everybody's mindful of the impact of heat and humidity on their crews. So I have to watch that, give them more breaks, make sure they're hydrated.
And some folks in your departments have shifted hours around as well.
That's right. CBU started, I believe, last week at an earlier start time for theirs. Parks has done that for years, and others have adopted. So, of course, sanitation workers are out before any of us are even beginning to think about waking up. So that's been a longstanding.
Yeah, they open the door and let the dark in.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. But some of the altered schedules are really a way to try to minimize traffic in congested areas. On our part, we're trying to take our own crews out of the traffic flow in peak times, and then some of it's just to watch for heat and humidity conditions as well and keep our employees safe.
Mick, to give the listeners a heads up, on July 12th, the transportation plan is going to be discussed publicly, and the public will have an opportunity for input. Talk about that.
So this is the final draft of the city's new transportation plan. These are, like many of the plans, that are requirements for federal or state funding. So you have to have one on file, and you update them in periodic cycles, and ours is due for an update. So this meeting will take place on July 12th from 5:30 to 7:30 in the council chambers in City Hall. The consultant tool design group will present the new plan. Some of the recommended street and bike path changes and connectivity maps will be shown, and you know, ways to just maximize the way that people get around our community on foot, on bike, and obviously in vehicles and buses and other forms of transportation. So again, most important thing about this, besides the public piece of if you're interested in these types of things, I know everybody's interested in it now because there's a lot of construction going on, but these are the things that drive the way the future transportation corridors will be laid out, and ideas for how to make it the most efficient as possible. And then all of these things tie into funding sources.
Now, you've got some announcements about some park closures.
Well, there's, talking about maintenance, there's some trail closures that we wanted to mention to people. Our trails are very actively used, and because of that, we want to make sure people know when there's some temporary trail closures. So there's two to mention this week. Beginning today, the north end of the Beeline Trail from the Moorback Way, that's where the Habitat Project is, on the northwest side of the Beeline Trail, all the way out to Adams Street, will be closed as some trees are removed so that they don't come down on trail users. So that's going on today, and if they need another day or two, they may have a couple of days of closure to complete that project. So just that section of the Beeline's closed. And then the Bloomington Rail Trail between Country Club Drive and Gordon Pike is closed this week while we treat, at least from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. when the staff's out working, while staff applies herbicide to invasive species like Asian bush honeysuckle and purple winter creeper. So just trying to remove some of the vegetation, invasive species along that trail. So from 8 to 3 for the balance of the week on the rail trail, and a couple of days on the north end of the Beeline, some trail closures to make note of.
That's right.
And then
if you want to be in the shade, you got to wait till 3 o'clock. That's probably not a bad deal, actually.
Mike, he's got a reminder for you that your entry in the 4th of July parade.
Yes.
Today's the deadline, so you need to get that all together.
I will. I'll sneak it into Keith's book so he can read off my name. How many entries? Are we capping it? Do we have plenty of space left? Where are we at, Mick?
Well, there is a cap of 100 units. I don't know how many there are that have registered so far. The deadline's actually tomorrow, so there is one more day. So Glass, you can breathe if you're not quite ready to put your entry.
That's right.
The entry fee is $25. And for more information about participating, call Bill at 812-349-3748.
Any,
and you all know about the fireworks on July 3rd.
I was just going to ask you about that.
Fireworks
we're
sponsored
good?
By CFC
downtown.
On the Trades District. That's very exciting as well. The first time we've done a downtown firework display that I can recall.
Mick, have you got any kind of a plan where people should go to watch it?
Yeah, anywhere where you can look up.
Yeah.
I think that's right. I think really you want to watch for, you know, getting yourself, I think anywhere within a mile radius will allow you to see the projected fireworks. So you just have to find some spot where you have an angle that isn't blocked by buildings to allow you to look up into the sky. I don't know how high they go right now, but that's what we've been told, about a mile radius you should be able to see. So that should give people a number of, I would think, park sites, even, you know, restaurants downtown. If you're outside at the right place looking up, you should be able to see things from that location. Or if you live close to the downtown, I'd imagine you could stand on your porch and watch it if you wanted
on
to.
On top
so
of parking
garage. Kind of got to find an open angle to the sky.
I've scoped out the window in the kitchenette here.
Yeah, that's good.
It looks that direction.
See that parking garage across the street?
You're right. You guys got a nice high view already.
That's right.
You might be in the perfect spot there.
It's like Wrigleyville, Mick. Rooftops, everybody.
Yeah, now you guys will be building a scoreboard so you can't see it.
So you can't see it. That's right. Yeah.
Make some money up there at the studio.
We'll fly them in by our helicopter to the rooftop. It's like Die Hard, Keith, just like that. Now, the fireworks, July 3rd, starting around 10 o'clock. July 4th is always the parade starting at 10 a.m., so that's a quick 12 hours right there, kids.
Well, they have stuff starts at 9 a.m.
Well,
we got the community band and things like that.
You and Inman will review
going
the stage,
on.
So
that's, right.
That's all fun, and it's all free. That's the great part, and we thank the city and CFC for putting all of that on.
Speaking about that, Mick, you got some concerts you wanted to mention.
Well, you know, Parks does a lot of different concerts. We've got the People's Park concerts that are going on multiple days of the week now, Tuesdays and other days. But the Performing Arts Series, which is our summer arts series of free concerts, tomorrow in what is commonly known as Third Street Park, but is really known as Waldron Hill and Buskirk Park. There'll be two bands playing. Frank Jones begins at 6:30. That's acoustic folk music. And then Mark Robinson's band, which is a rocking blues band, will start at 7 o'clock. So free admission if you're downtown, want to just put your lawn chair out or a blanket out and listen to a couple of bands play in Waldron Hill and Buskirk Park. There you go. Today, if you want to do a little activity at People's Park, there's the Code and Key Escape Room, which is mind-bending puzzles to solve from 11:30 to 1. And then on Saturday, July 16th, there's a live concert in People's Park and a bunch of other things. Go to the park's website, and you'll find activities virtually every day of the week. I was just scanning through the calendar. Things that I used to know, I don't know. I have to look them up now in my new job. But, wow, there's just so many different activities offered by our Parks Department, and they've got a great calendar that you can just look at on the day and that you have time to do something, and then a whole list of options pops up, and you can select in the menu of the things that you like to do.
Mick, real quick, there was a thing in the paper, and I want to ask you about this, about People's Park and that the problems that had been in People's Park have moved to other places. Is that kind of the theory of the balloon? You push in on one side, it expands out on another side in terms of any problems you had in People's Park, you just moved to a different part of the city now?
Well, I think partially, yes. I think there's always partially, if you have issues and you can't get to the core of what that issue is being caused by, and we can talk about what those are in another show, but, you know, we've got homeless challenges, we've got unemployment, we've got people with mental addictions and all those things, and a community that takes care of people like Bloomington attracts folks that need help. So, you know, if those are problems for people, and that's the way they look at it, and sometimes there are unintended consequences of a population of folks with some of those disorders that, you know, may or may not be getting treatment, may or may not be relapsing, those are human issues that we have to be sympathetic to and try to help with. The question is, when is there too much, and what happens when you start taking an action in one place, Keith, your analogy of squeezing a balloon on one place and it comes out in another area. So I think you all recall a year ago what we were dealing with on Kirkwood. To be honest with you, that had nothing to do with any of the issues I just mentioned. That had to do with a group of people who wanted to test the boundaries of what a community would allow as far as sleeping on the streets and partying and, you know, not behaving well, and we cut that out. And that group of people, as far as I know, A, they haven't returned, and B, that didn't squeeze to somewhere else in the community. Now, our other challenges that we mentioned that are related to mental health and homelessness and lack of jobs and things, that's still evident, and we still do have people in the region that come to our community. I would say that a lot of good not-for-profits are working hard to try to help people out of that condition. You know, you need housing, you need jobs, and you need mental health care. And that's all a challenge. You can't ramp that up fast enough to solve all of the challenges that we're facing in our community and other communities around the country. And you can certainly talk about the opioid crisis. We have it here. To what level? It's different here than it is in some other cities and counties in Indiana, but, you know, it exists, and it exists for some of those same core reasons: homelessness, despair, mental health issues. So So until our society is ready to attack those things on a more holistic approach, we're going to have that. It's not going to go away. There's balloon squeezing, all those things that we may be doing aren't going to change that until we get to the core of that. And again, there's a lot of good people working on that challenge, but that element in Kirkwood last year, that's from everything we've understood, that's gone. We don't want that to come back. We won't allow that kind of behavior to come back. And so hopefully that the programming we've done, the Downtown Safe and Civil City Task Force initiatives that we continue to implement, all of those things we believe are helping with the disruptive, unruly, illegal behaviors. The other piece of that, that's a bigger challenge.
All right, Mick, good job as always, my friend. If you have one piece of bicentennial trivia, we're kind of up against it. Let's do that quickly.
You got it. What famous musician was born in Bloomington and will be returning to perform a concert in town in July? Is it A, Sammy Hagar, B, Joshua Bell, C, David Lee Roth, or D, Yo-Yo Ma?
Well,
the only one
that rings a bell.
Yeah, is Bell.
Sammy Hagar.
It is Joshua Bell.
Well, David Lee Roth from West Lafayette.
He'll be back in. He'll be back performing in a concert in town in July. Don't have the date. We'll get that for you.
We call that a teaser. That's a teaser. He should be back celebrating the bicentennial. Mick, great job as always. We love the insight and we love the information. Enjoy your Father's Day weekend. Hopefully you get around in somewhere and stay hydrated. 93 on Saturday, 94 on Sunday. Woof.
Thanks, guys. You enjoy yours as well.
All right, take care, thanks. Mick.
Good job, Mick Renheisen, the deputy mayor of the city of Bloomington.